Hey everyone, another week, another podcast. I, as always, am Craig Eastman, coming to you from just outside Liverpool, and in Glasgow, as always, is site designer, editor, and all-round overlord Scott Morris.
Sup?
And in Brighton's in Falkirk, it would be site contributor Drew Tavendale.
How you do?
Continuing our more brief format from last week, we've got a mere three films to look at this week. So without further ado, we're going to crack on and bust those mofos open. Word. Bertram Pincus, Ricky Gervais, is a dentist for whom people skills are most definitely of secondary concern. His problems are about to get a whole lot worse, however, after an apparently routine operation sees him dead on the operating table for several minutes. Upon awakening, Bertram realises he has gained the ability to see and communicate with the dead, a newfound gift which is about to prove to be the ultimate annoyance. With support from the ever-reliable Greg Kinnear and the ever... existing Tia Leone, Ghost Town is Gervais' first opportunity at leading man status in the US. Has his success as writer and producer of The Office and Extras allowed him to hit the ground running? Or is this the faceplant that many have forecast the difficult transatlantic humour transplant may finally bring? Drew, I'm gathering that you saw Ghost Town.
Certainly did.
And is it a faceplant or is it a joyous, raucous comedy of epic proportion?
Well, I wouldn't say it was either, but it's certainly... closer to the latter. It's rather hard to tell whether it's going to be a faceplant because he's British and he helped rewrite it. So, and being British myself, obviously the humour is more to me. It's going to be hard to tell if it's going to be a faceplant because really it's going to be how the US audience accepts it, and they're going to judge it from a British point of view. And he's a British comedian. It's a lot of the jokes, to my mind anyway, being of a totally British nature, the humour being used, but I could be entirely wrong. But what would you say is it's very funny. It's like nominally a romantic comedy, although it eschews most of the normal cliches of such a piece and isn't really all that romantic, which is quite refreshing, really.
It was always going to be a hard sell, Scott, having the Americans adopt a sort of dry, sardonic British wit, but are they likely to take this to heart, do you think, or is it just too marginal?
It is hard to say. I've long since given up trying to work out what an audience is going to find funny, given that they keep making American Pie films. So assumably we must be going to see them, so I have no idea how to predict it. But I will say this, I've not actually seen the American versions of The Office, but I'm told it's quite similar in tone to the British one. And given that the Ricky Gervais character here is more or less based at points on his character from The Office, but it does seem that it's probably got a better chance than any. Certainly it's got a better chance than the Simon Pegg vehicle we spoke about a couple of weeks back, simply on the basis that this is actually quite funny. How to Lose Friends and Alienate People wasn't. It's very dry, it's very acerbic. And I think Ricky Gervais does actually make a really good job in this film because he has to spend pretty much the entire film being an unlikable twat, yet at the same time still being funny while being unlikable before he gets sort of rehabilitated towards the end. And he does that very well. It's a great performance from him, certainly in terms of comic acting. Yeah, I found it very funny. I have no real complaints with it. And if it's certainly more worthy of launching his career in America than a grand number of other failed attempts at other comics have had going over the water.
It's just a question of whether or not they'll clutch it to their bosom. I don't know. I think their big mistake was having that strap line on the poster saying the humour is to Drew. I don't think they'll get that.
It's a very specific marketing, isn't it?
Certainly
I appreciate it.
I will say this about the marketing, though. If you've seen the trailer and thought, that doesn't look very funny at all, you'd be perfectly right, because the trailer's dreadful, and the film is many times better than it would have it seem, so don't let that put you off, please.
I haven't seen the trailer at all, so I should maybe better leave it at that until I can catch up with the movie itself. Director DJ Caruso's cinematic career began in earnest with 2002's promising The Salt and Sea, a hard-hitting yet stylish study of crystal meth addiction starring an on-form Val Kilmer. Having worked his way up through the likes of Taking Lives and the more significant high-profit cost-ratio effort Disturbia, the Hollywood wallet has finally opened for Caruso and he now helms big-budget techno-thriller Eagle Eye. Coming across as a hybrid of Enemy of the State and The Game, Eagle Eye has fresh-faced Shia LaBeouf framed for a terrorist plot and pursued at breakneck pace by the authorities, all the while being guided by an omnipresent, ever-watchful female voice who promises to see him right so long as he follows often dangerous instructions to the letter. Derided for its requirement of a galactically proportioned suspension of disbelief, Eagle Eye has nonetheless taken good money in the US and hits British shores in the hope of stealing your pre-bond pound. Scott, is it likely to be a good spend?
Yes, it's a lot of fun. As you say, it doesn't have a sensible bone in its body. I have to wonder what it is about computer systems that's so inherently dull that every time anyone makes a film film that involves them in some way, they have to reinvent them in the least practical way possible. if it's that boring, just don't put them in films rather than turning them into some strange, deviant device. The whole film's absolutely ridiculous. It's full of daft things like people hacking into remote control cranes. Like, why is a crane remote controllable?
Why is a crane connected to the internet?
What are you thinking about? And it's a strange setup. I mean, the whole point of the trailer appears to be that who is pulling their strings should be the massive source of suspense and mystery and who it's actually going to turn out to be. Yet when you actually sit down and watch the film, the very first thing they introduce you to is a brand new artificial intelligence system, and it's a film. So you can see where this is going.
Yes, and also, as if that weren't enough of a giveaway, Scott, you must remember that it has a single glowing red eye.
Which... always the choice of the evil eye, isn't it?
Scott.
Stanley Kubrick.
Scott. Please continue with the review, Scott.
Well, I was listening to an interview with the screenwriter earlier today, and he kept going about how he's being influenced by Hitchcock works like North by Northwest and stuff like The Third Man and even Saboteur. It's like, well, no. Nah. You've been influenced by Terminator 3.
I was going to say, fancy being influenced by films you, on all evidence, haven't seen.
it's maybe a little unfair, because I mean, what actually gets written compared to what actually winds up on the screen has been filtered through several layers of bullshit by umpteen of different execs and the director himself. But even if it does make Die Hard 4 look quite sensible in comparison, it's still quite a good film. It's, well, as I say, not something you want to go and see for the terms of tight plotting and believability and that sort of sense, but it does deliver on a really good chase sequence. Essentially, it's a chase film, same as sort of Terminator 3 kind of thing, with big, massive action sequences that all look quite convincing and quite exhilarating. It is as mad as a bag of spiders, but it is quite good fun for the amount of time you're sitting there watching it. I mean, okay, not going to change anyone's life. Not the best film you'll see this year, but it's a fun film. You can't really ask for too much more for your £6.
Would you agree with that, Drew?
Not entirely. First thing to say is that you probably gathered from what Scott was saying, but it's a very, 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 very silly movie. And that said, though, it's not unenjoyable. The story, such as it is, tears along at a rapid pace, and that doesn't allow a lot of time for any "why precisely are they doing that? Wow, that's fantastically stupid" type of reflection. Unfortunately, we do apply any thought to it, it begins to rapidly disintegrate. The copious chase scenes don't actually have a lot to do with the plot, and those familiar with the trailer will already have been smirking at the preposterous collection of terrorist equipment that's been delivered to young Jerry Shaw's apartment, presumably directly from the Acme mail order catalogue. And I feel also particular mention should go to the big bottle of generic poison prominently placed over his right shoulder, or his left shoulder. Not that any of that seems at all suspicious to Billy Bob Thornton's FBI agent, but of course, if it did, there would be little reason for Jerry Shaw to run away and be chased millions of times. And as Scott was mentioning too, top marks also to the production team for a spectacularly silly and impractical design for an intelligent computer system.
I was saying to Scott earlier that I don't understand this fascination Hollywood have with taking something that should really be a sort of anonymous bank of rack upon rack of rather dull looking servers, and they seem to filter it via an acid dose through an IKEA catalogue, and you come out with these films where it's, you know, this bizarre bespoke design for a computer which involves sort of strange and practical amalgamations of liquid and technology, and we should start some sort of protest on our site, I think.
That's exactly what I said to Scott after we came out of the cinema too, is that, no, if there was going to be an evil artificial intelligence that was manipulating people, it'll be some little terminal with the word Dell or Apple written on the back of it, connected to a server farm, and it'll look incredibly mundane.
I can understand that might not quite be as exciting to look at on a 40-foot cinema screen, but at the same time, I think the pendulum is swinging slightly too far the other way.
Yeah, but surely... that would actually be more menacing, because it would look like exactly like every computer everybody's got in their house.
Yeah, the anonymity of it would be quite threatening.
Yeah, the mundanity is like, oh, that's kind of more chilling, really. But despite all of what I said...
you can't poke a Dell server in the eye, though.
More's the pity. Well, despite all of that, though, I was quite surprised to find I didn't actually hate it. And it looks glossy, and the production and acting of are of a higher quality than one normally sees in this type of techno thriller, and the plotting never lets up, but I still can really recommend it. It's probably too stupid to fall into the same sort of disengaged brain and enjoy the nonsense category of, say, Death Race, but if you did end up seeing it, I doubt you'd be too upset. You would be able to disregard the review of one person I believe wrote for a newspaper in Austin, Texas, who described the film as being engrossing as an intellectual puzzle. Oh dear, oh dear.
I possibly want to wait 3 months and then get some beers and a pizza in and succinctly nailed by one Thai IMDb user as a cross between Kill Bill and Rain Man. Chocolate is the latest. Wouldn't have seen it in cinemas if not for Ong Bak, Asian import, to hit our screens. It sees an autistic female martial arts master attempt to even up her gravely ill mother's debts by tracking down the criminals who owe her money and beating seven bells out of them. I haven't seen Chocolate, but if Ong Bak was any indication of Thai martial arts movies, then I'd guess it was a showcase for no doubt poorly paid Thai stuntmen who are required to be thrown 80 feet from balconies and such onto metal railings for a handful of peanuts. And it would probably also be immense fun. Am I right, Scott?
Yeah, I would say so. It's from the same director as Ong Bak, Prakya Pinkanal. Here, apparently, if Tony Jaa and the director have some kind of falling out over payment terms, so he's not appearing in this film. Instead, it's gone to the young girl, who's charmingly nicknamed Jija, which is great because it means I don't have to try and pronounce her full name. It follows the same kind of basis in the sense that it's not particularly strong on plot. I mean, the last Tony Jaa film, The Warrior King, essentially reduced to someone steals Tony Jaa's elephant and he gets it back by elbowing people in the head. This has a very similar sort of role to it, apart from the fact that it does actually have a really convoluted plot at the start, which you can safely ignore for pretty much the rest of it.
I'm guessing it becomes efficiently distilled to people just kicking each other in the face, though.
Pretty much. I mean, I've got a plot recap sitting here that actually makes it sound less sensible than Eagle Eye, if such a thing is possible. However, when it actually gets down to it, the reason you're actually going to watch this film is the fight choreography, which, like most other ones, is exemplary. I haven't seen anything quite like this for a while. It's certainly the best martial arts film seen in a good while. It doesn't make a lick of sense. Before you know it, there's henchmen everywhere flying out of the wazoo, and all of a sudden this girl's fighting someone who's credited as an epileptic boxer. it's not a film that is strong on sense, but it is strong on style. It is almost nonsensical, but the fight sequences are inventive, imaginative, fluid and graceful, often beautiful in that sort of, oh yeah, sense of the word beautiful. If you've even the vaguest hint of a passing interest in martial arts movies, then you've pretty much got to see this film. If it does suffer from a weakness, then sadly it's actually the lead character. It's essentially a young teenage girl doing this martial arts stuff. And while the blooper reels at the end show you that, yes, she could actually split my head open in a fight if she chose to, on screen it doesn't look quite so convincing. Part of what gave the Tony Jaa film so much power is that it did legitimately look like he could, well, rip off your head and shit down your neck. It doesn't quite come out, sort of scream out of the screen at you in this film, so at points it does look sort of silly, and combined with a plot that's already very silly, that can take the edge off it at some points. However, it's for the most part saved by the fact that they say you have a Thai stunt team that are happy just to kill themselves to get a film out. I mean, there's one point where one of the fight at the end is sort of taking place in the sort of between the windows and balconies of a building, sort of a 3 or 4 story building. And at one point, someone just gets hurled off it and sort of bounces off things and falls to the ground. I thought that's a convincing effect. I wonder how they did that. And then you watch the blooper reel at the end, and it just shows you they just took someone and threw them off a building. It's like, okay, that's not really an effect so much as just killing someone, more or less.
It's a double-edged sword for Thai stuntmen, isn't it? Because it keeps them in work. The bean counters are clearly sitting there with a list of priorities, and they're saying, right, well, the good news, guys, is we don't have the budget for CG, so you've got plenty of work. Yay, excellent stuff. The bad news is we don't have a budget for safety nets, so you're probably going to die.
I mean, I think it's a very strange spot in Thai martial arts cinema at the point before governmental legislation inevitably kicks in to stop people breaking their necks for a film. But until that day comes, we can enjoy the fact that people are happy to bounce and land on their necks to get a decent shot out of things. So let's just enjoy it.
God
while
bless
it
Thailand.
Yes, let's say it is a very, very daft film. It is quite enjoyable for what it's worth. If you like seeing people getting hit in the head by things and aren't too concerned about the fact that why does this guy who owns an ice factory have so many evil goons, apart from the fact that it's a homage to the big boss. If you can get past the very high concept nature of an autistic girl that can learn martial arts by watching them, then if you can get past that, and it's quite an ask, I assume, but it's a lot of fun.
That sounds pretty slick. Drew, did you bear witness to chocolate?
I did, yes.
Did you want to lick it?
Dude, it's about a 14-year-old girl. Of course I didn't. No, I would agree pretty much entirely with what Scott said. Yeah, the problem is there's that 20, 30 minutes at the beginning where it takes quite a good long time to get going, just largely explaining the history of this girl and her mother and how she's come about these martial arts skills, and it's completely and utterly irrelevant.
It's not only irrelevant, it's also nonsensical as well, which is my main problem with it.
It just could be lopped off entirely and just go straight into the fighting, because none of the plot makes any difference at all to anything. Yeah, and there's a fair point about the girl, because she's so slight, not that convincing in terms of being able to take all these guys down, but it's such a pity because clearly she does have the skills. Yeah, there's not really anything more to say to it other than if you like martial arts, watch it. Oh, and also extra kudos for having a character credited as Evil Candy.
Evil Candy and the Epileptic Boxer. Excellent stuff. What capacity is the guy? Is that his name, Epileptic Boxer, or is he literally a boxer who has epilepsy?
Well, I'm assuming that refers to the sort of the twitchy kid with the glasses that she fights at some point, but he doesn't have epilepsy, he's just twitchy.
Oh. I was hoping for round one, ding 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 ding. Never mind. So value for money wise then, does that make chocolate the most fun for your pound this week at the cinema?
Well, assuming you can find it at a cinema, it does seem to have a limited release of one cinema somewhere in Hull, but if you can get a hold of it, and it is now out on available through DVD emporiums, if you like importing that sort of thing, so then yes, best thing we've covered today.
Excellent stuff. I was going to say, you've certainly made it sound like the one I want to catch up with in another week where I managed to see precisely nothing, but never mind. I've got two friends to do my thinking for me. Well, everybody, thanks for joining us again in another whistle-stop week of the cinema releases possibly doing the rounds in your area on the proviso once again that you live next to that one cinema in Hull. I've been, as always, Craig Eastman, and joining me tonight, as always, were Scott Morris.
Ta-ta.
And Drew Tavendale.
Bye-bye.
As always, we appreciate you taking the time to listen, and if you can be bothered, we'll be back roughly this time next week with some more cinema-related shit, or probably more precisely, I think I'm correct in saying, James Bond and very little else, because nothing dares come near him this year. So, in the meantime, take care, and we will speak to you again soon. Bye-bye. And in Edinburgh, as always, is the oneliner.com's
editor. It's not in Edinburgh.
I've done it again!